This is number three. We find that some managers believe that they should choose only one channel to communicate a message because doing so is, in their opinion, more efficient. But for important or complex messages, studies reveal that multiple channels may be appropriate. A common thread underlying the topics discussed so far is the fact that people's perceptions can undermine their attempts to communicate. People do not pay attention to everything going on around them. Different people attend to different things, and people interpret, distort, and perceive the same thing in different ways. All of these processes create problems in communication. Consider how many problems could be avoided and how much more effective communication could be if people took time to ensure that the receiver attends to the message being sent. If people took time to consider the other party's frame of reference and attempt to convey the message from that perceptual viewpoint. And if people took time to take concrete steps to minimize perceptual errors in both sending and receiving. You should make an effort to predict individuals' interpretations of your message and think in terms of how they would misinterpret your message. It helps to say not only what you mean, but also what you don't mean. Every time you say, "I'm not saying X, I am saying Y," you eliminate a possibility of misinterpretation. The point is this. When one individual sends a communication to another, he or she is assuming that the receiver will use the same codes of past experience in interpreting the message that were used in sending the message. The receiver, in turn, will assume that the codes he or she uses to give meaning to the message are the same ones that were used by the sender. This is probably best illustrated by humorous stories that set a person up with one set of assumptions and codes and switch to an entirely different set in the punchline. Consider the following story as an illustration. A woman visits a spiritualist and says that she has heard that arrangements can be made for her to speak with her recently departed husband. The spiritualist indicates that this is no problem and sets the scene by completely darkening the room. After a brief wait, a voice comes into the room saying, "Mary, are you there?" She replies, "Oh, yes, Henry. Oh, Henry, how good it is to hear your voice." Henry says, "It's good to hear you, Mary. How is everything going with you, Mary?" "Oh, Henry, I'm so very lonesome, but I've learned to live alone." "How is everything with you, Henry?" "With me? Oh, everything is wonderful. It's beautiful here. The skies are blue, and there are many white fleecy clouds floating by. There are lush green fields and hills as far as I can see. And there are cows everywhere. There are white cows, black cows, speckled cows, all kind of lovely cows." "But Henry," responded Mary, "I didn't know that there were any cows in heaven." And Henry answered, "Who said anything about heaven? I'm a bull in Argentina." Communication between wife and husband was distorted by Mary's use of coding systems related to the Bible, while Henry is living in a world of reincarnation with an entirely different set of codes. This simple story illustrates that daily communication between people is frequently distorted because each uses slightly different assumptions and codes, but they make the assumption that each is using the same system, and in real life, there is not a punchline to help them out. This assumed overlap of codes is incorrect a large percentage of the time, but it is not determined by the participants, and, sad to say, and here's where we have communicative problems, it goes undetected. Organizational life with its hierarchy of superiors and subordinates is an ideal culture for nurturing the problems of conflicting assumptions. The organizational climate usually generates an atmosphere in which subordinates fear they might appear to be stupid if they ask too many questions. Often they assume they understand what is being passed down, but they really don't. Thus, conflicting assumptions are apt to abound in the levels of the hierarchy, between the sections of the hierarchy, and between people in the organization. Therefore, what do we need to do? Well, we need to look at improving communication skills. You may have experienced the frustration of arriving for a meeting only to find that some of the anticipated participants did not seem to know about it. Well, how is it that some individuals received a particular communication and others did not? While miscommunications are sometimes due to misdirected mail and lost messages, they often arise from individual factors that can impede or enhance the communicated process in organizations. Such factors are perceptual issues, semantics, verbal and nonverbal consistency, and communication skills. First, we will note perceptual processes. Perception is the process that individuals use to acquire and make sense out of information from the environment. The process is complex and involves three main stages. The first stage is selecting. That is the filtering of stimuli that we encounter so that only certain information receives our attention. For example, suppose that a manager taking over a new unit has heard a rumor that a particular individual in the unit has a short temper. If the manager is not careful, this piece of information may cause the manager to pay particular attention to situations in which this person is impatient or angry. The second stage of the perception process is organizing. That is, the pattern of information from the selection stage. Keep in mind that often there is a tendency to organize information into patterns that we expect to perceive. In the example of the individual rumored to have a short temper, the manager may begin to organize the selectively perceived behavior into a pattern of incidents in which the individual was angry. The third stage is interpreting, that is, attaching meaning to the information that we have selected and organized. In our example, the manager may, over time, begin to interpret, perhaps unfairly, the organized information is indicated that this person does indeed have a short temper. The perceptions of individuals are affected by a variety of factors such as experiences, needs, personality, culture, and education. As a result, it is very likely that individuals will differ in their perceptions of the very same situation and messages. Several common tendencies to distort perceptions are particularly applicable to managerial communication situations. These tendencies are stereotyping, the halo effect, projection, perceptual defense, and the self-serving bias. Awareness of these perceptual tendencies can help managers avoid the misunderstandings that such distortions often create. For example, stereotyping. Stereotyping is the tendency to attribute characteristics to an individual on the basis of an assessment of the group to which that individual belongs. When a manager engages in stereotyping, two steps occur. First, the manager categorizes the individual as belonging to a group whose members are perceived as sharing certain common characteristics. Second, the manager uses these perceived common characteristics to draw conclusions about the characteristics of the individual rather than acquiring information about the person's characteristics more directly. Guilt by association. Stereotyping leads to problems when the generalizations do not apply or do not apply equally to all members of the group or when people try to generalize about less specifically related characteristics. In such situations, managers may communicate inappropriate expectations. And then there's what is referred to as the halo effect. The halo effect is the tendency to use a general impression based on one or a few characteristics of an individual to judge other characteristics of that individual. For example, a manager may use a general impression based on one thing that a worker does, such as compiling a well-done or poorly prepared report, judge the worker's ability in other areas of work, such as handling customers. To avoid the halo effect, interviewers and managers need to make special efforts to collect enough data to make reasonable judgments in all the specific areas that they're trying to evaluate. And then there's projection. Projection is the tendency of an individual to assume that others share his thoughts, feelings, and characteristics. Unfortunately, projection can encourage managers to engage in one-way communication because they assume that they know how their employees feel. They know how their employees think. They're all in agreement. Engaging in two-way communication to learn how other individuals really do feel about various issues certainly help managers avoid the ill effects of projection. And then there's what is referred to as perceptual defense. Perceptual defense is the tendency to block out or to distort information that one finds threatening or that challenges one's beliefs. As a result, managers or workers may not be very receptive to certain types of information. This may lead to the shoot the bearer of bad news syndrome, in which a person tends to behead the bearer of bad news even though the bearer was not the cause of the problem. Thus, some managers get angry at employees who provide information about serious problems that cannot be ignored, even though the manager, in all honesty and truth, needs to know about it. Perceptual defense. And then there is self-serving bias. Self-serving bias is the tendency to perceive oneself as responsible for success and others as responsible for failure. This tendency sets the stage for serious communication problems between managers and their subordinates. For instance, a manager may attribute subordinate success to her own efforts of leadership, but conclude that failures are due to the subordinate shortcomings. Subordinates, on the other hand, tend to see success as resulting from their hard work and their ability, and to view failure as stemming from bad luck or factors in the work environment, including areas controlled by their supervisor. Having noted some of the perceptual processes, we now note the area of semantics. Words are symbols. Therefore, they do not necessarily have the same meaning for everyone. The study of meanings and the choice of words is called semantics. A semantic net is the network of words and word meanings that a given individual has available for recall. Each individual has his or her own semantic net, which hopefully overlaps at certain points, but does not correspond exactly with the nets of others. Semantic blocks are the blockages or communication difficulties that arise from word choices. Such blocks are commonplace because the various meanings and shades of meanings that individuals attach to words depend on each person's semantic net. Receivers decode words and phrases in conformity with their own semantic networks, which may be very different from those of the senders. Now, within organizations, different units can have terminology that has evolved through tradition or is related specifically to that type of work which is being done. A common cause of semantic blocks is the use of professional jargon, language related to a specific profession but unfamiliar to those outside of the profession. Such language must be used with care because it can be somewhat bewildering to newcomers, customers, and visitors. Nevertheless, organization-specific language can help build cohesiveness among employees, reinforce the corporate culture, and support a competitive edge. In recent years, employers have been dismayed by college graduates with poor communication skills. Keep in mind that there must be consistency between verbal and nonverbal communication. A friend who is about to give a speech may say, "Oh, I'm not nervous," as she continually twists her note cards and she shifts from one foot to the other. Well, how do we interpret such a message? When we receive a message, we consider both the verbal and the nonverbal communication elements. There's six major ways that these elements can be interrelated. In the first four, the nonverbal communication reinforces the verbal message. Number one, repeating the verbal message, that is, explaining the location of a certain department to a visitor and pointing to the appropriate direction. This could be one of the ways that we can interrelate this information. Number two, complimenting or adding to the verbal message. That is, having a look of embarrassment when talking to a supervisor about poor performance. Number three, accenting or emphasizing a verbal message. That is, pounding the table while stating the quality must be improved. Number four, regulating the verbal exchange. That is, making a head nod or eye movement or a shift in posture that signals another person to continue speaking or to stop speaking. So in these first four, the nonverbal communication reinforces the verbal message. In the fifth way, the nonverbal message replaces the verbal. For example, substituting the verbal message. That is, using facial expressions or body movements to communicate a message without speaking a word. In the sixth way, the verbal and nonverbal communication elements combine to send an inconsistent message, contradicting the verbal message, that is, yelling, "I'm not angry," or shaking and perspiring heavily before giving a speech while insisting, "Well, I'm not nervous." Evidence suggests that when the verbal and the nonverbal elements contradict each other, the receiver is most likely to interpret the nonverbal communication as the true message. This means that managers must pay attention to the nonverbal as well as the verbal part of the message that they send. In addition, to gain better insight into the thoughts and feelings of others, managers should scrutinize both the nonverbal and the verbal parts of the message they receive. It's important, therefore, that a manager or an administrator work on improving sender skills. Communicators, that is senders, can improve their skills in making persuasive presentations. They can improve their skills in writing. They can improve their skills in language use. And certainly, they can improve their skills in sending nonverbal messages. First, we want to consider presentation and persuasion skills. Again, this is a place where we can make improvement in presentation and persuasion skills. As a manager, you will be called upon frequently to state your case on a variety of issues. You will have information and perhaps an opinion or proposal to present to others. Typically, your goal will be to sell your idea. In other words, your challenge will be to persuade others to go along with your personal preference. As a leader, some of your toughest challenges will arise when people do not want to do what has to be done. Leaders have to be persuasive to get people on board. In some organizations, how you say things counts more than what you say. Well, if this is the case in your organization, you might strive for style and entertainment in your presentation. But as a manager, you should establish a communication culture that emphasizes accuracy, integrity, fairness, and objectivity rather than showmanship and image projection. Knowing a few fundamental principles of persuasion will help you convince others to adopt your viewpoint. These principles focus on the sender, the message, and the receiver are the audience. The sender must have credibility. This means that your audience must know about your experience and they must believe that you're trustworthy. Questions about the message concern whether to include opposing arguments and the order in which to present the arguments. The answer to these questions depend on characteristics of the audience. You should present only your side of the argument when the audience is friendly and unaware of opposing arguments. But if the audience is initially hostile to your position and aware of counterarguments, then you should bring up and refute the opposing view. Also, when you present both arguments, you probably will be more effective if you present your viewpoint last. It's generally effective to be repetitive. This is not to say that you should stand in front of your audience, repeat yourself over and over again, but it means you should state your viewpoint in a variety of ways and at different times and with different audiences. Great leaders convey their visions by seizing every opportunity to talk about them and communicate them tirelessly until their followers buy into the message. Now that's worth almost memorizing, and it's certainly worth applying. It's also important to work on your writing skills. Effective writing requires clear, logical thinking. Writing, in fact, can be a powerful aid to thinking. Your first draft rarely is as good as it could be. If you have time, revise it. In the process, strive for clarity, strive for organization, strive for readability, and strive for brevity. Early on in our discussion, we emphasized that we live in a society of wordiness. We need to be able to say our message in the most succinct way possible. You want people to find your memos and reports readable. Use specific concrete words rather than abstract phrases. Instead of saying a period of unfavorable weather set in, say it rained every day for a week. Use a dictionary and a thesaurus and avoid fancy words. Go through your entire letter, memo, or report and delete all unnecessary words, sentences, and paragraphs. Brevity is much appreciated by readers who are overloaded with documents, including many wordy memos. Be critical about your own writing. In connection with your speaking and writing skills, you must also consider your language. Here we would use the word jargon. Jargon is actually a form of shorthand and can make communication more effective when both the sender and the receiver know the buzzwords. But when the receiver is unfamiliar with the jargon, misunderstandings result. When people from different functional areas or disciplines communicate with one another, misunderstandings often occur because of language barriers. Therefore, whether speaking or writing, you should consider the receiver's background and adjust your language accordingly. When conducting business or ministry overseas, try to learn something about the country's language and customs and culture. Americans are often less likely to do this than people from certain other cultures, but those who do will have a big edge over their competitors who do not. As noted earlier, we must also consider and improve our nonverbal skills. Except when you intend to convey a negative message, you should give nonverbal signals that express warmth, respect, concern, feelings of equality, and a willingness to listen. Undesirable nonverbal signals show coldness, disrespect, disinterest, and a feeling of superiority. Following suggestions can help you send positive nonverbal signals. First, use time appropriately. Avoid keeping your employees waiting to see you. Devote sufficient time to your meetings with them and communicate frequently with them to signal your interest in their concerns. Second, make your office arrangement conducive to open communication. A seating arrangement that avoids separation of people helps establish a warm, cooperative atmosphere. In contrast, an arrangement in which you sit behind your desk and your subordinate sits before you creates more of an intimidating, authoritative environment. Third, remember your body language. Research indicates that facial expressions and tone of voice account for 90% of the communication between two people. Several nonverbal body signals convey a positive attitude toward the other person. Assuming a positive closeness to the person, gesturing frequently, maintaining eye contact, smiling, having an open body orientation, such as facing the other person directly, uncrossed arms and legs, and a forward lean to convey interest in what the person is saying. Keep in mind that to be effective, an effective communicator in the various settings in which you must function, a manager needs strong listening skills and feedback skills. These skills are particularly critical because managers spend a large portion of their time communicating orally.